The Lord be with you. Good morning, everybody. It's a little strange for me to be standing here, but I'm looking forward to it. And today's topic is the Presbyterian Church. Presbyterian Church present. Last week, Heath Carter did 250 years in 45 minutes or something. My task isn't as challenging today. And by the way, I'm Dave Davis. I'm the pastor here at Nassau Presbyterian Church. I told Holly she didn't need to introduce me. And my plan today is to give you a slice of the Presbyterian Church now and then tell you a little bit of the work that I do in service to the national church. When I'm away from the office here, it's usually when I'm doing service for the larger church. Except for this last week, I spent a few days at Calvin Seminary at the Center for Excellence in Preaching. Calvin Seminary received a grant from the Lilly Foundation. The Lilly Foundation is giving away $100 million on grants that to make preaching more compelling. And you may remember a few weeks ago, there were 25 pastors here from Philadelphia Presbytery. Jess Winderweedle is leading a group in Philadelphia Presbytery. It's the same grant program. So I was a part of 15 pastors who were invited in to do a focus group to help the center think about what they might, how they might invest that money in helping young preachers improve in their preaching. So I'm a little physically sore today because Kathy and I babysat our two grandchildren overnight this weekend. So my back hurts and my arm hurts. But I will press on. Before we begin, let's pray together. Holy and gracious God, we give you thanks for the gift of this Lord's Day. And in the midst of the tumult and the tensions in the world, we give thanks for the chance to come in here and pray for the world, to worship you, to learn, and to be together in fellowship. And so bless our congregation this day. In the name of Christ we pray. Amen. I'd like to begin with a question. How many Cradle Presbyterians are here in the room? Ah, more than I expected. All right. Because if we asked that of a new member class in Nassau Church, there would be very few Cradle Presbyterians. So I'd like to begin with giving you a slice of life here at in the church. So the Presbyterian Church USA that we are a part of was formed in 1983 at the reunion of the Presbyterian Church in the Southern Strand, the Presbyterian Church US, and the Presbyterian Church. Hey, Andrew, could you help get some more chairs, please? And then the United Presbyterian Church, the Northern Church. Those were united in 1983 for the first time since the Civil War. Currently, the Presbyterian Church USA has almost 7,000 congregations, 300 worshiping communities, which are not commissioned as congregations. Those tend to be either experimental worshiping congregations that are meeting in different places. There's a worshiping congregation in Pittsburgh that's meeting in a bar on Sunday mornings. The Match Fit exercise place has a worshiping community somewhere out in the country. But more often, it's immigrant communities that are nesting in particular congregations. And then 125 new church developments. The PCUSA currently has 1,100,000 followers. These are confirmed members. Membership at reunion in 1983 was just over 3 million. But the Presbyterian Church has been losing members since I was born. My parents were members of United Presbyterian Church, the Northern Strand in Pittsburgh, where I was born. In 1962, just the United Presbyterian Church had 3.2 million people. And so the number of 1.1 million the church has been on a steady decline in numbers. Some folks like to keep track of how many people are in those worshiping communities and how many folks are in those new church developments just to make people feel better about the numbers. But you know that the Presbyterian Church is not alone in those dropping numbers. So let me show you, though, even more surprising, the distribution of congregation size. So almost 6,000 churches in the Presbyterian Church are 100 members or less. And then you have these in between, up to 200 members, another 1,500 members, 500, just under 1,000, 800, up to 800, 200. And then the larger churches, up to 1,200, about 100 churches, and up to 1,632 churches. And I bet nobody would have guessed there's only 41 churches over 1,600 members in the Presbyterian Church. And so the distribution, it's important to know that how many smaller churches there are in the Presbyterian Church. Good question. I have a slide for that. The membership distribution in those churches, then, when you add up the numbers, so 375,000 Presbyterians are in churches under 500 members, 500,000 are in churches 100 to 500, and churches over 1,000, that should say. Well, I'm reading backwards. So under 100, 245,000, right? In the middle, 500,000, and then over 500, 375,000 members. So while there's so many smaller congregations, most Presbyterians are in larger churches. And here at Nassau, year-end 2023, we are at 1,000 communicant members. When I came 24 years ago, Wallace Alston told me that Nassau Presbyterian Church has been a 1,500-member church for 20 years, plus or minus 250. One of the reasons that this number is 1,000, part of it, of course, is the trends in the denomination and in the Protestant church. But Nassau Presbyterian Church, we are really good about cleaning our roll. All those numbers in churches are inflated because churches don't keep accurate rolls. Nassau Church has a very accurate roll of members. And so this would be, does not include the clergy, including clergy who are in the room today, does not include retired clergy, does not include associate members or affiliate members. Affiliate members are folks who are committed to either to another church or another denomination or another tradition, but who are a part of our life here. That's who we consider affiliate members. Associate members, several years ago, the session created a term, associate membership, for us to put young adults who are aging out of college time, whose families are still in the life of the church, who come back at holiday time and are a part of us. We removed them from the roll so we didn't have to pay per capita, but they are on the associate member roll, which for those of you who are polity geeks in the Presbyterian Church, there's no such thing in the Book of Order as associate or affiliate members. You're either on the active roll or you're not a member. And so just this last session meeting, we removed, who was it? Crawford, it was Crawford. Crawford Miller? We moved him, we activated him from the associate membership and transferred him to the First Presbyterian Church of Greensboro, North Carolina. And that goes to show the ministry of Peter Hazelrig, who was chaplain when Crawford went down there. And so Crawford's older than my kids, so he's probably 35 or more. But we activated him and then moved him on. Yes? The per capita amount currently in this presbytery is per member is $40. So Yeah, it's right. I don't think, I mean, I think it's more just being accurate with our roles. And, you know, I know somebody else who's now joined the Broadway Presbyterian Church in New York City, our daughter, and at some point, Elizabeth and Kyle will, and then we will activate and transfer. So that's the point is to say these folks are every bit a part of our congregation, but it's just trying to keep our roles accurate. In my first congregation, there was somebody who did pay the per capita, and their child was like 50 years old and hadn't darkened the doors of the church. But so we don't mean it to be punitive in any way. I'll come back to that as well. The question was, what do you mean by per capita? And I'll come back to that. So my service, that's a picture of the denomination right now in metrics. My service to the General Assembly of the Church, the highest body of the Church, is as I'm currently the co-moderator of the Office of the General Assembly, and I will become, this summer at Salt Lake City at the General Assembly, I'll become the moderator of the Committee on the Office of the General Assembly. What I'm going to do now is describe to you the national offices of the Presbyterian Church. All right? So this is a snapshot. If you could see it, I'm going to describe it to you so you don't have to memorize it. This is a snapshot of the national offices and the national body of the Presbyterian Church. The highest body of the church is the General Assembly that currently meets every 2 years, and it will meet this summer in Salt Lake City. The presbyteries, we are a part of the Presbytery of the Coastlands. These are the regional bodies of gatherings of churches. There's about 65 churches in our presbytery. It's the Presbytery of the Coastlands, and it's the central New Jersey from the Delaware River to the ocean, from Trenton to about Metuchen. And there are 65 churches. Easily 10 to 12 of them are going to close in the next 10 years because they're in that category of very few members. These are the various agencies and committees that are a part of the General Assembly at the National Office. This is the Office of the General Assembly. That's the committee that I serve on. This is the Presbyterian Mission Agency, which is what oversees the programs of the in the life of the denomination nationally. This is the Presbyterian Investment and Loan Company, which gives loans to congregations for projects, for new congregations, or for just doing major building renovations. The Presbyterian Publishing Corporation, you might remember a few weeks ago, we talked about the Presbyterian Publishing Corporation. It's also known as Westminster John Knox. That's the academic press, and that's the group that we gave a grant to in honor of Carol Wareheim for all her work here, but all her work there as well. Presbyterian Publishing Corporation. The Presbyterian Foundation is the endowment arm of the church. I was a member of that committee. I was a trustee there and also board chair for several years, and they manage almost $3 billion of mostly restricted funds that were given to the church nationally and have designated purposes. And then this is the Board of Pensions that carries our health insurance and our pension. Thanks be to God for the Presbyterian clergy. Right, pensioner? Yeah. They do give a raise every year. So these agencies, what's unique about them, the Board of Pensions is its own incorporation. The Presbyterian Foundation is its own incorporated body. The Publishing House, same. Presbyterian Investment and Loan, also its own incorporated. The life of the General Assembly is really run by the Committee on the Office of the General Assembly and the Presbyterian Mission Agency. That is the identity, incorporation is the corporate identity of the General Assembly. Still incorporated in Philadelphia, by the way, in Pennsylvania, where it started. This board here, this says a corporation. That's the title of it, a corporation. At reunion, The founding document said, a corporation shall be formed. It's also called Administrative Services Group. This group provides all the HR, all the financial support, the legal support for the Office of the General Assembly and the Presbyterian Mission Agency. So all of this represents the General Assembly at its highest levels of the Presbyterian Church. And here's the rub. This is far too big for a church of a million members. And it's not affordable or sustainable. So we'll come back to that in just a minute. The Office of the General Assembly, as envisioned by the General Assembly and the stated clerk, supports the ecclesial formation of individuals and councils. Councils are sessions, presbyteries, synods. Synods are, we're a member of the Synod of the Northeast, just the regional. Formation for providing an important framework and foundation that enables the church to do vital ministry in the world. More specifically, the office of the stated clerk is the highest ecclesial office in the head of communion for the denomination. The head of the Office of the General Assembly speaks to and for the church, directly elected by the body, which is the General Assembly, serves for 4 years, and there's only been 5 stated clerks that have served the church since 1983. At the time of reunion, one of the clerks serving the Southern Church, the stated clerk, was Bill Thompson. Bill Thompson is Tyler Koop's grandfather. Tyler Koop is a member of our congregation, Tyler and Kristen Koop and their 2 kids. The current stated clerk is an acting clerk, a classmate of mine from seminary, that's Bronwyn. She's the acting stated clerk. J. Herbert Nelson was elected as the clerk in 2016, the first African-American clerk of the denomination, and he stepped down this year, not completing his second term. And Bronwyn was appointed as acting clerk, and just Friday, the nominating committee announced the name of the nominee to be elected this summer as the new stated clerk, Ji-hoon Oh, the first Korean stated clerk of the denomination, will be elected in the end of June. The Office of the General Assembly provides oversight of the stated clerk, accountability of the stated clerk, and it is a committee. It's not its own independent board. There are 14 members from around the country. Half of us are clergy, half are not. We are elected by the General Assembly. We have a moderator and a co-moderator, and then we work with the other agencies of the denomination as well. The primary work we're doing now is planning an assembly that will happen in this summer. These are the areas, ministry areas, the mid-council ministries, that's supporting the work of presbyteries. The Office of the Stated Clerk, and the Presbyterian Historical Society in Philadelphia. So this committee oversees those 3 areas. I'm not going to go through this, but this is all the stuff that they supports the presbyteries. And then the Office of the Stated Clerk, which includes everything from the judicial processes, constitutional work, ecumenical relations with other heads of communion around the world, all kinds of things the stated clerk does. And then the Presbyterian Historical Society in Philadelphia, Jim Moorhead was a staff member at PHS as the co-editor of the Presbyterian Journal of History. Heath Carter is currently a staff member and is co-editor of that journal. It's an incredible collection that is used both by scholars and by churches. Most of our records are held in the archives of Princeton Seminary. Most other congregations send their archives to the Presbyterian Historical Society. There used to be a different historical society that was at Montreat in the Southern Church, and those were combined into the Philadelphia office and their collection there in Philadelphia. Back to per capita. The per capita apportionment income for this year is almost $13 million. Presbyteries have different rates of per capita. This presbytery sets a per capita rate of $40 per member. That of that $40, a little less than 10 goes to the General Assembly, and then some goes to the Synod, and most goes to the Presbytery of those per capita funds. The office of the General Assembly, the running of the General Assembly, all of it is funded almost 100% by per capita. And you see the mathematical challenge when per capita is based on membership. So it's not sustainable to have a General Assembly of the size, or even have meetings that are used to be in convention centers, and still are for now, but won't be for long. The math just won't work. I'm going to describe to you these General Assembly meetings. How many of you have ever been to a General Assembly meeting of the Presbyterian Church? So, for a whole crowd of cradle Presbyterians, but not, you know, only a few. It's interesting. Interesting question. Several years ago, Jonathan, you know that it became trendy for churches not to pay their per capita for cause or a matter of conscience. When the church was tearing itself up about ordination and inclusiveness, there were churches refusing to pay their per capita. Some churches refuse to pay their per capita now for cause because our health insurance will provide care for women to provide abortions if they were necessary, and so some don't pay. But the reality is, churches don't pay because they can't afford it. That's the going trend now. But the denomination receives about 95% of per capita. One of the reasons is there's a judicial decision that presbyteries have to pay to the General Assembly and the Synod whether their members pay or not. And so, and not all presbyteries honor that, but that's the highest governing body of the church ruled that presbyteries are responsible for churches that don't. We don't get all of our per capita, but we pay all of our per capita. So all of our members don't send in $40, but we consider it our responsibility as the session pays all of our per capita each year. One of the reasons why we keep the rolls where we were, because before this presbytery, we were providing almost 45% of the income to the Presbytery of New Brunswick. Yeah, which isn't healthy for the presbytery either. That's a little different now after we formed the Presbytery of the Coastlands. I apologize, the print is too small here, but I wanted to describe to you what the denomination has been through trying to have General Assembly through the pandemic. General Assembly is traditionally 3 days of people in committees, about 500 commissioners now, and then 4 days of in-person meeting in a convention hall. So the committees are all in a convention hall and committee meetings, and then there's a big exhibit hall, and then there's a meeting, a plenary meeting of more than 500 voting delegates, because the delegates include youth advisory delegates, ecumenical delegates, and then the elected by the presbyteries. Every presbytery elects commissioners to serve, both ruling elders, like session members, and teaching elders, clergy. And it says here 3,000 attendees and visitors. The General Assembly was like a reunion for Presbyterians. The generation before me, everybody would always go and hang out and see friends, and it was a big Presbyterian party, which is more fun than you might think. In 2020, they were supposed to have a General Assembly in Baltimore. The pandemic hit, and the committee that I am on, I wasn't on it then, shifted in 6 weeks to a fully virtual General Assembly. Nobody went to Baltimore. Everything was online. And they decided, because it was so all online, only necessary business was conducted. And so financial reports were approved, people were elected, and some other business was taken. But it was only necessary business. And then in 2022, I was now on the committee, and the meeting was held in Louisville. But only committees came to Louisville. So committees at General Assembly, there's usually about 18 committees, and there's usually about 20 to 25 people on a committee. and those committees were broken up into groups of four. And so over a period of 2 weeks, the committees came in smaller groups. There was a vaccine requirement, a mask requirement, and so they split them apart. So not everybody was there, and they met at the Presbyterian Center, our national office in Louisville, Kentucky. And then the plenary was online. So then 600 people were getting online to have a meeting, and moderators were moderating a meeting of 600 people. This summer, this General Assembly changed their plan, made the plan to flip it. So this summer, the plenary will gather in Salt Lake City, but all the committees will be online. So the committees will function before everybody goes to Salt Lake City. They kind of just flipped it. And that's the way it will happen in 2026. And then how it's going to happen in 2028 hasn't been decided yet. Notice the numbers of the assembly. So this summer will be the 226th General Assembly of the Presbyterian Church. So there's a little bit of history there. So that's just a little bit of a snapshot of how the offices go at the highest level. And when I said it wasn't sustainable, I am, as part of my role on the Committee on the Office of the General Assembly, I am also serving on what is called the Unification Commission. 12 people elected by the church, appointed by the moderator, excuse me, not elected, appointed by the moderator, the current moderator of the denomination. And we have 4 years to come up with a plan to redesign the national offices of the church. More specifically, it's called the Unification Commission, and it's unifying the Office of the General Assembly with the Presbyterian Mission Agency. Those two that are bound by the corporate identity of the denomination. Those two offices, which currently employ in the OGA side, Office of the General Assembly, about 75 people, and in the Mission Agency, more than 400 people, and with a combined budget of about $80 million. So the per capita budget that comes in, you saw that number. The rest comes in through churches that are just giving to the denomination, or from those investments and those funds that I described that are held at the Presbyterian Foundation. It is partly financial, but it's also, this structure is for a church in the 1950s. All of those other entities that are incorporated, they're not going anywhere because they're incorporated on their own and are really well-funded. But the national offices are not. And so this is the first major change in the Presbyterian Church at the national level, and it's already causing ripple effects and tension. Of course, folks who work in Louisville are fearful about their jobs, understandably so, but there's a lot of turf protecting and power and money, because there's power and money involved, and it is already a very challenging, and after the General Assembly this summer, it'll become a little bit more difficult because all of our work will start to be more public. And it's unclear yet where, we don't have a word of the Lord yet, how things are going to change. But also General Assemblies will never go back to the way they were in big convention halls with 3,000 people. And there's reasons for that, more than just funding. It is certainly funding, but having 3,000 people fly across the country to go when we now have other technology, is that really good stewardship of the church's funds? Because every staff person of a presbytery goes, that's all per capita money coming from congregations. So is it good stewardship? Is it good stewardship of the earth? And those large gatherings like that, is that really the best way for us to be making decisions? The General Assembly is also a very political body, and I don't mean that. I mean that positively and negatively. Presbyterians are called to vote our conscience as we are follow the will of God, not our constituents, right? So when people say, you've heard me say this a lot, when people say that the U.S. government is shaped a lot like the Presbyterian government when it was all put together right here That's not true. The U.S., the Presbyterian, the U.S. government, we don't look like the U.S. government. The U.S. government looks like us, with one big exception. Politicians are supposed to follow the will of their constituents, but Presbyterians follow the will of God, and God alone is Lord of the conscience. And so this new form of, these virtual forms of the General Assembly really shook up advocacy groups and folks wanting to influence votes in the commissioners. Because you would go into a big hall, and outside in the lobby, there's folks giving you talking points for different debates. There's folks trying to get your ear about a particular issue. And so all those folks that want to influence commissioners were frustrated and upset by the decisions that were made about how to have an assembly. But I can tell you, the commissioners, they really enjoyed it because they didn't have to walk a gamut. And these are important things people are talking about. I don't mean to minimize. I mean, when the church was trying to come to some consensus on inclusion and being open and affirming, what the Methodists are now tearing themselves apart, the Reformed Church of America is tearing itself apart, the Anglican Church has already torn itself apart, Episcopal. At Calvin Seminary, the Christian Reformed Church is about to pull itself apart. And one of the reasons our membership is where it is, at a million, is that as we went, Presbyterians went through that, there were plenty of churches that left. Not as many as people thought. And conservative churches tend to be larger churches. And so there were a lot of larger churches left to form a new denomination. So that also includes the drop in the numbers of the membership. So General Assemblies needed to change in content, not just by money. The other thing that happens at a General Assembly is the folks who know the game can get the votes. People who look like me talk the most. Trying to create a rule among 600 people that, hey, if you're a white clergy and you know how this all works and you understand Robert's rules and you can get around it, why don't you just stay quiet until five people of color or women have spoken before you speak? Those sort of equity primes. And so that's an important part of the change that's going on in the denomination as well. Trying to, power doesn't always have to do with money. Sometimes it's just power. I'm going to stop and just ask if there are any questions. See, I get to know who asks all the questions too. I already know that. So, Nico.
Hold on one second.
You have to wait. We're recording, I think, so.
Well, if we're recording it, then I need to talk to my publicist. But okay, so the question that I have, Dave, is early in your presentation about the small churches, churches of 25, churches of 100, what is the challenge with affording the clergy for those churches? I mean, if you have a church of 25 or 100, you cannot really...
Yeah, you know, it's a very good question. The question was, what about clergy serving in those congregations? Some are served by lay preachers, lay folks who have taken training to be commissioned lay preachers. Many don't have pastors. Most have part-time pastors. And my experience is that in small, struggling churches, the decline, not just in membership, but the church's existence with a part-time pastor, it's not just a steady decline. It's heading for a cliff. And then, poof, then the church closes. So that's my experience. And some pastors are tent makers, you know, that biblical term. They have a regular job, and then they serve a church. But it's a struggle. And our relationship with Witherspoon and with Westminster, their ability to have full-time ministers is not unrelated to our partnerships. I said that double negative. It is related to our partnerships because I don't think the decline will be really rapid. Does that answer your question? Because it's also not just salary. It's health insurance. It's pension. Yeah, it's a challenge. Yeah, Val.
Tell us about the management
I'll repeat it. Go. Yeah. So the question is about the endowment management at the foundation. The Presbyterian Foundation, as I said, it's approaching $3 million under management. Our endowment at Nassau Church is managed by the New Covenant Trust Fund, which is a subsidiary of the Presbyterian Foundation. And it's all professionally managed. It's also SEC regulated. And the performance has been solid over time and reflects and is consistent with its benchmarks. And then the foundation sets an endowment draw, a funding formula for anybody who has money invested there. And that could be a congregation that has a permanent fund to take care of the organ. We don't, by the way. I wish we did. Or individuals who used the New Covenant Trust Fund as their retirement planning, or congregations that have other funds for other things, or these funds that go to support the national church. And the funding formula follows along with what other institutions do, like 12 rolling quarter averages, certain percentage. And then they set the percentage of 3 to 5% draw. All professionally managed. Next question.
John. Dave, thank you. That was a terrific presentation. Where is the Presbyterian Church in terms of numbers versus other mainline Protestant churches?
Sure.
That's question number one.
I knew you had another one.
You know that. Yeah. You know that. Come on. But that's not that's easy. The second is it sounds to me like what you're a part of is a strategic plan for yes. the church. And as you said, what we have now is not sustainable. So clearly what you're doing is critical. It's true. It's happened in every company, and obviously people in Louisville are nervous. I don't blame them, but it has to happen for the betterment of the church. Do you have any professional strategic planners that are on that committee? With all due respect, Dave, or is it folks?
No, you hit that question that the 12 of us look at each other and say, what the heck are we doing? Because if it was a corporate merger, the corporations would pay a lot of money to bring in experts and spend a couple years. So we have 4 years. We do not have any particular experts in merger. We have some corporate people who have some experience, but that wasn't their job. We have hired two consultants, one consultant on change management and one consultant on cultural, because we're doing a merger of the Office of the General Assembly and the Presbyterian Mission Agency, two very different cultures, and two cultures that haven't always gotten along, just to put that politely, and leadership that hasn't always gotten along. And one of the challenges is that the stated clerk is elected to be, to be a parliamentarian, to shepherd the Constitution, to make decisions, to lead the disciplinary processes or the people who have to be the head of communion and ecclesial law. Well, that's not a manager of an $80 million budget. And the Presbyterian Mission Agency person, there is a president elected by their board who's usually a visionary clergy person who wants to drive a vision. So part of the challenge, John, using your corporate metaphor, this is an $80 million budget and there hasn't been a CEO. And that's part of the reason why there has been this mission creep. Presbyterians... A lot of like congregations at the national level, Presbyterians are really good at thinking up of a new program. They're not very good at closing or sunsetting one that was started before World War II. And that's a real challenge. Thank you. Every major denomination is losing members. Thank you, Pew Foundation. You don't have to tell us that all the time. This is a great question to end on too. Maybe one more if I go quickly. But we're consistent, right? Denominations are dropping at the same rate, right? So Presbyterians are here, right? And I imagine that Anabaptist in numbers might be a little below where we are. Above would be Methodists, then Episcopalians, and then Baptists, because there's so many different kinds of Baptists. But all of us have been going through that. And then Independent, Assembly of God, Pentecostals. And it's not true, because we were told for decades that, oh, people are leaving the Presbyterian Church because they're going to more conservative places. That's not true. Mostly they're leaving and then not going anywhere. And so, but as you read these reports, every denomination is going through it, and some are going through it now in ways that are more painful based on culture and politics. Presbyterians just happen to go through the welcome and affirming pieces earlier than most, and that was largely due to the efforts of folks like my predecessors and the work that was going on in the 80s. Yeah, one more question.
This is a quick one. What's the diversity mix in the PCUSA?
It's a struggle, because Presbyterian Church is predominantly a white Euro-American denomination. It's 8% African-American. There is it's a growing Korean population. There are Korean churches in the PCUSA have their own presbyteries. They have regional presbyteries. And Taiwanese, there's two or three Taiwanese congregations in this presbytery as well. So those numbers are rising and stable. And the church's commitment to diversity and inclusion is hard to fill seats in these places that you're looking at, because there just aren't enough folks to serve. And so our really important commitment to equity and inclusion provides a pickle sometimes. But it's a white Presbyterian church predominantly, and it probably always will be. You don't think so? Next week. Come back next week.
That's a great note to wrap up on. Let's give a round of applause for Pastor Dave. Thank you. I'm going to pass the mic over briefly to Andrew, who's going to be leading us next week and talking about the future of PCUSA.
Thank you, Holly. Again, my name is Andrew Scales, and my wife, Len Turner Scales, and I are the chaplains with Princeton Presbyterians. I see current and former board presidents Thais Carter and Jim Moorhead, and former board member Kathy Sackenfeld here with me, and I bring you tidings of great joy, which is that Christ is alive, and he is at work in and through the stories and lives of undergraduate and graduate students right here in Princeton, New Jersey. They are poets. They're leading the way on cancer research. They are speaking to the UN about the school-to-prison pipeline in America. They are historians of the Caribbean. Anything you can imagine, our young people are doing wonderful things. They come from six continents. They come from across the spectrum of gender and sexuality, and they are excited about being the body of Christ right now. So please join me, and next week I'll be with my colleague Rosa Ross, who works with us planting a new campus ministry at TCNJ called UKirk Ewing, which already has a dozen students gathering together for worship and fellowship and service. I hope you'll join us. We are so excited to share our stories with you.
Thank you.